When Brahma spoke originally the Vedas, in the beginning of creation, they were mixed together. All the mantras from the different Vedas, there was just one Veda. And then, later on, they were, Vyasadev, sorted the Vedas in four types of Vedic mantras, in four books, you can say. And they are called... Everybody knows. Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva. And in each Kali Yuga, every Kali Yuga, there is Vyasa means editor, who appears and he does the same job. He's compiling the Vedas in four different books. It happens again and again. Kali Yuga, the Vyasadeva we have is special because he is incarnation of Narayana. Sometimes he's not. So, according to Muktika Upanishad, originally there were 1,130 branches. These are the branches of every Veda. And they go like this, 21 for Rig Veda, 21 branches of Rig Veda, 109 for Yajur, 1,000 for Sama, and 9 branches at Atharva Veda. So each branch had these four divisions inside, which are called Samhita, Brahmana, Aranyaka, and Upanishad. That means, originally there were, 1,130 Samhitas, Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and Upanishads. But as we mentioned before, in due course of time, many of those literatures were lost. Now, we are left with the essence. Fortunately, we have the essence of this. So now we'll speak a little bit about the four branches now. The four parts of the Veda. Starting with the Samhita. Samhita is the main part. Usually it's so much so that when we say Rig Veda, for example, usually what it means is Rig Veda Samhita. The Samhita part. When you say Rig Veda, for example, usually what is meant by this is Rig Veda Samhita. It's not the Brahmana, Aranyaka or the Upanishad part. So this is the main part of the Veda, and Samhita means, the word Samhita means collected together, sorted together, systemized and collected together. So Samhitas consist of mantras dedicated to different demigods, like Agni, Varuna, Indra, etc. Rik means is the next month, the first of the Vedas. They say it's, scholars say it's the oldest. Of course, we don't accept this. They are eternal. But they somehow or other got this impression that this is the oldest Veda. So Rig means stotra or hymn. And Rig Veda Samhita contains these mantras with which we invoke the demigods. So next is Yajur Veda. Yajur Veda comes from this root Yaj, which means to worship. It describes in prose how to actually to conduct the sacrifice. What is to be done? How to make the kunda? What the ingredients we need and how to make it? This is the Yajur Veda. And then the it's interesting story. It's divided into Krishna and Shukla Yajur Veda. There is interesting story. It's described also in Bhagavatam how this separation between the two Yajur Vedas came about. What was this sage? Vaishampayana. Yes. I think Yajnavalkya. Yajnavalkya studied Veda under Vaishampana, and then he committed some mistake. He did some offense. And then Vaishampana ordered him to bring back, to give him back all the knowledge he had attained from his guru. And then it is described how Yajnavalkya literally vomited all the mantras he learned from his guru. And then the other disciples of Vaishampana, they became birds and they ate all the mantras that they have been vomited, so they learned them in this way. So after this, Yajnavalkya performed very severe austerities, and he pleased the sun god, from whom he learned a new set of Yajur mantras, which were unknown even to his guru. And this new so-called set of Yajur mantras is called Shukla Yajurveda. The old one is Krishna Yajurveda. And they are more prominent, they are very prominent in India, and I think in South India it's Krishna Yajurveda more prominent, and the North, the Shukla. Anyway, so this is a story from Bhagavatam. You can read it. I forgot which canto it was. It's very interesting. So the next is Sama. Sama Veda means, the word Sama means that which brings tranquility of the mind, which purifies and pacifies the mind. With the mantras from Sama Veda, the deities that have been already invoked are pleased, because Sama Veda is actually synced. The other mantras are chanted by different notes, but there are only three positions you can do. But Sama Veda actually singing. So the whole science of the Vedic science of music comes from the origin of Sama Veda. So in this way, first we invoke the demigods, then by Rig Veda, and then by the mantras from Yajur Veda, you conduct the sacrifice, which is Abhideya. So first is Sambandha, then Abhideya, and then by Sama Veda, the mantras from Sama Veda, you actually please the demigods, which is the goal of the sacrifice. And this is Prayojana. And what is left, what is not in these three Vedas, is Atharva Veda, miscellaneous. Everything else is in Atharva Veda. In Atharva Veda, there are different rites for fulfilling different material desires, and also magic things. All the magical things are coming from Atharva Veda. This is the origin. And associated with these four Vedas, you have four types of priests. And they are expert in one of those. Of course, you have Brahmanas who are expert in all Vedas. You have three Vedis, Chatur Vedis. But usually, they are associated with one of these Vedas. And the first one, the one who invokes actually the deities, is called Hota. He chants the mantras from Rig Veda. Then the one who establishes the sacrifice, who knows all the ingredients and how exactly to perform it, it's the Advaryu. He acts according to Yajur. And then Udgata is, he's the singer, he's singing the mantras from Sama Veda. And there is another one who is called Brahma. He supervises the whole Yajna, and if there is a mistake in the performance of Yajna, he explains what is the atonement, how to counteract the mistake and to get the actual result, although there is a mistake. So it's one important, there is one very important thing to know about the Vedas, is that they are monotheistic, although they do prescribe worship of different demigods. So how you reconcile this? Yes.
Worship the Lord through his servants?
Yes, in other words, you understand that everything comes back to the origin of everything, which is Krishna,
the Lord,
and all the demigods are just his servants. Yes, that's it. So this reveals one special feature of the Vedic monotheism, because we have monotheistic traditions in the West also. So this specific feature is that the unity of all demigods in the Supreme God, rather than denial of the demigods. You know, this very strong notion in the Christianity and Islam against worship of father gods, demigods worship. But this is immature understanding, because the demigods are just servants of the Supreme Lord. So we're not against. We don't hate the demigods. We just understand what is their real position, and we worship the Supreme, Krishna. So this is the Samhita part. So the next part is called Brahmana, where the actual conduct of the sacrifice is explained. The Brahmanas. So are we clear what we're discussing?
Yes.
We're just discussing the Samhita part till now. Samhita part of the Veda. Now the next part is called Brahmana, and the Brahmanas, in the prose text, they explain the meaning and the practical application of the Samhita, and they are studied and practiced usually by the Grihasthas, because they have to perform many sacrifices traditional in the Vedic times.
Samhita,
and then the next is Brahmana. It's called Brahmana. By the Grihasthas, by the family man. Samhitas are studied in the Gurukul by the Brahmacharis. As our Brahmacharis, they study Samhita in Upanishads also. Yes? They're memorized, and then the application of this Samhita is given in the practical application in the Brahmanas. There are elaborate instructions how to perform Yajna. And then the next part is called Aranyaka, which means, Aranya means forest. So they are studied by people who live in the forest. And those are the Vanaprastas. Aranyakas also explain the meaning of the Samhitas, but from a different perspective. They give the esoterical or the hidden meaning or the metaphysical meaning of the Samhitas. Is that clear? The practical, they both explain the meaning of the Samhitas, but the Brahmanas explain just the practical application, how do you do the Yajnas, and then the Aranyakas explain the metaphysical meaning of the Samhitas and the sacrifice also. Like, for example, you have in the Purusha Sukta, you have one verse which says there are three Kushagras. Blades, yes. They have to be placed in certain order. And they are for protection from Rakshasas. This doesn't explain that. But you get this from the... This is the Aranyaka part. You get this metaphor, hidden meaning from this part of the Veda. And also, you have verse from... The next verse from Purusha Sutta says... And you have 21 firewoods. You have to feed the fire with 21 firewoods. And this is this symbolizes the 12 seasons, the 12 months, the 5 seasons, the 3 worlds, and the sun. But this is given in the Aranyaka. It's not given directly in the Samhita. So this kind of understanding you get by the Aranyakas, what is the hidden esoterical meaning. And then the last part is... what is the last part?
Upanishads.
They give the philosophical, the ultimate meaning of the Samhita, of the Veda, and that's why they're called Vedanta, the end of knowledge. And they are compared as the ripened fruit of the tree. Yes?
Which Vedas, Shri Upanishad?
Yes, I was going to come to this. It's part of... it's very interesting Upanishad because it doesn't appear in this philosophical portion, but it appears directly in the Samhita part, which is unique. I think there is only one Upanishad like this. Like we explained, you have Samhita, Brahmana, Aranyaka, and the end you have Upanishad. But this Ishupanishad, Ishavasya Upanishad, appears in the Samhita part of the Yajurveda. I think it's written here. No, some additions.
Yeah.
I think Shukla Yajurveda. Yes, the pierce in the end of the Samhita of Shukla Yajurveda. So we mentioned the Samhitas are learned by the Brahmacharis, then the Brahmanas by Grihastas, Aranyakas by Vanaprastas, and Upanishads are traditionally studied only by Sannyasis. So what we're going to study now is meant for Sannyasis actually, traditionally only. Of course, in one sense, the devotees of Krishna are all Sannyasis, or at least we're supposed to be dedicated to the Lord, and all our endeavors are meant to please Krishna. So we are also qualified to study. Traditionally, they are studied only by sannyasis. Yes.
I'm not sure, but my memory is not wrong, but I remember hearing explanation that Vikya, Dursama, Atharva are studied respectively by Brahmachari, Grihastha, and Sannyasa.
Maybe I might be true. I never heard this explanation. Maybe I have to ask my Maharaj for it. Maybe there is some way how to understand it, some way to understand it in this way, also to classify it in this way. But this, at least, this is the standard understanding about the Brahmanas, Aranyakas, Upanishads. So now Upanishads are very important because everybody accepts the Upanishads. All Vedic schools, Vedanta schools in India, they accept and they base their teaching on Upanishads. And in the West also, even the scholars who don't believe in the Upanishads, even they accept Upanishads as one of the major sources of knowledge about the Vedic tradition. Srila Prabhupada says that if you have if you have some statement, and if you can support this statement with a quotation from the Upanishads, then this makes your point very strong. Everybody will accept, doesn't matter which tradition he belongs, at least in India. So the Upanishads reveal the ultimate meaning of the Vedas beyond the rituals for material prosperity. And the Upanishads themselves, they proclaim, if you have studied perfectly all the Vedas, but if you didn't reach the Upanishads, then your studies are not complete. It still has to be studied. Here we get to the interesting point. Upanishads are, we say that they are the philosophical parts of the Vedas. But this kind of philosophy is very different from the Western philosophy. We shouldn't confuse these two. What are the differences? First, the word philosophy. You have, this is the Western word philosophy, means to love wisdom. This is the word they use for philosophy in the West. The Sanskrit word is different. It's called darshan. Darshan means systematic or scientific way to revelation of reality. Darshan means you learn how to see reality in a certain way. It's not just you love to speculate and to think about esoterical hidden things. You learn. It's a practical, scientific way to learn how to what is called Shastra Chakshus, how to see the world by the eyes of the scripture. It's a big difference. Western philosophy deals mainly with different opinions from different people about the reality and how do you understand this reality. Ontology means what is out there. Epistemology means what are the means how to understand what is there, what is the method of knowledge. And these are just different opinions of different people. They don't base their knowledge on anything sacred. It has been a long time. It used to be like this before. But since many years, I think Nietzsche was the first one who officially announced that God is dead. Before that, there were many people thinking this way, but they were not daring to say this. But Nietzsche was the first one who officially declared. And this happened already at the beginning of the 20th century. And Priti Prabhu was talking a few days ago. He was explaining the Vedic way of the Vedic way of learning, the different stages that you start from manana. No, you start from shravana. You listen from the teacher, and then you contemplate manana, and then it comes in the dhyasana, which means you realize this knowledge, and you can practically, actually by application, you realize it, and then it becomes part of your value system. You live this knowledge. In the West, in the Western philosophy, actually, I think only the first stage is there. There is only Shravana. They listen, they read books. And there is some kind of manana, contemplation, but it is not at all meant to be applied in the practical life. It's just theoretical contemplation, and you try to understand what that guy meant, what he meant by saying this. But it is not at all meant to be practically applied in the life. This is not taught there. It doesn't come. So what to speak about Nididhyasana? So the third stage is not at all there. The second stage, kind of it is there, but not really, because there is no desire for applying the philosophy in practical life. So we have only Shravana there, just speculation. So that's why Western philosophy and the philosophy of the Upanishads, it's a big difference. So we should not confuse these two. Another thing is that the goal of philosophy in India, if you take the Sadarshanas, the six philosophical schools of India, they share the same goal. The goal is always to attain liberation, how to free the soul from the material entanglement. And also they all agree that there is a soul, there is a body, there is a difference. We are not the body, we are the soul. The soul is eternal. It goes through different bodies, reincarnates. So they all agree about this. And they all agree that the goal of philosophy is how to attain liberation from this cycle of birth and death. In the West, there is no such thing. They don't share such understanding. The Western philosophy is... the goal is not at all liberation, not anymore at least. So when we talk about philosophy in Indian context and in the Western context, we should have this in mind. It's a big difference. Okay, a little more. I know you're tired after. How many classes? Four? Three? But you have class in the morning also. Mahabharata? Okay, stay online. So the Upanishad Upanishad contains sacred doctrines. They are called rahasyas, who are to be imparted only to qualified students. They are not for everybody. Rahasyas is like in Bhagavad Gita, you know this verse, Rahasyam Hiyata Tuttamam. Krishna tells Arjuna, I give you this confidential knowledge because you're not envious, you're my devotee. How is this verse? Bhakti Simesa Kachiti Rahasyam Hiyata Tuttamam. Because you're my devotee, therefore I'm giving you this knowledge. So these are confidential truths in the Upanishads. And Muktika Upanishad gives a list of 108 Upanishads. And out of these 108 Upanishads, there are 14 who are very prominent. They are as follows: Isha, Kena, Kata, Prashna, Mundaka, Mandukya, Aitareya, Brihataranyaka, Chandogya, Shvetashvatara, Kaushtiki, Subala, and Mahanarayana. So out of this, okay, so why they are important? Why they are prominent? Because the principal commentators on the Upanishads, they commented on them. That means Madhva, Shankara, Ramanuja and Madhva, they commented on these Upanishads. That's why they are taken as principal. And out of these 14, 10 are very, 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 very prominent. The first 10 that I listed are very prominent because they have separate commentaries from both from Shankara and Madhva. Baladeva Vidyabhushana, our Acharya, he supposedly wrote commentaries on Dasha Upanishads, on the first 10 Upanishads, but only his commentary on Ishavasi Upanishad is available at the moment. So all the Upanishads, the meaning and the philosophy of these Upanishads is summarized by Srila Vyasadeva himself in the Vedanta Sutra. And all the Vedanta schools, they accept that there are five main topics of the Upanishads, or five main topics of Vedanta. So these are synonymous, you understand? Upanishads means Vedanta. When you say Vedanta Sutra, that means the Vedanta Sutra. But when you say Vedanta, that means Upanishads, the end of knowledge. So these five topics of the Upanishads are as follows. First, the nature of Brahman. What is the nature of the Absolute Truth, the Absolute Reality? Second, the nature of the soul and its relation with Brahman. Third, material energy, the nature of the material energy, its origin, and what is its connection with Brahman. So these first three topics clearly outline Sambandha. The fourth one, the means of attaining Brahman. This is clearly sadhana or avideya. And the fifth one, the nature of the supreme goal and the status of the jiva in mukti. What is the situation of the jiva, of the spirit, of the soul when it attains liberation? Does it merge with Brahman or it sustains its individuality? So this is prayojana. So these five main topics of the Upanishads are also classified in Sambandha. The first three are Sambandha, the fourth one is Avideya, the fifth is Prayojana. And all Vedanta schools, that means even the Mayavadis, the impersonalists, all Vaishnavas for sure, they accept that these are the five topics of the Upanishads. And next time we will see how they are also the main topics of the Upanishad. Yes?
Bhagavad Gita sometimes called Gita
Upanishad.
Is this generally accepted as an Upanishad?
Yes, it is accepted as the essence of the Upanishads also.
By all the schools?
Generally, yes. Yeah, but at least by the Vedanta schools, it's accepted. Shankara also. He wrote commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And this famous thing he wrote, Gita Mahatma. Yeah, there he says that Gita is the...
Who wrote that?
It's ascribed to Shankara. Shankara. Gita Mahatma. Where he compares Gita as the knowledge of Gita. No, how is this? Krishna is... No, Arjuna. And Krishna is milking the cow and Arjuna is the calf. So it's the essence of all Upanishads. Gita. Gita Upanishad. And there are many similarities between Gita and Upanishads. The same doctrines and even the same words are used.
These 5 points often.
Gita deals with these five too.
Yes. Ishvara, Jiva,
The same. Well, generally the five topics of Gita are a little different, are phrased in different way, but the same knowledge, the same subject matter action. And there was even a verse from Gita who appears almost exactly in the same way in one of the Upanishads. I forgot which one was. Anyway, that's accepted. Everybody accepts Upanishads and Gita Upanishad as the essence. Okay, so something else? Or we'll continue tomorrow. Yes? Yes.
Can you say the first one here, nature of Brahma?
Yes.
Sometimes they are not. Sometimes they say that they are different. Like one and others. Is it not always the same, or is it different? When you say Brahman here, you mean this aspect of Brahman, this personal aspect of Brahman?
Mm-hmm. No, here we mean absolute truth, which is Krishna ultimately, and Brahman. No, Brahman here refers to Bhagavan, you can say, to Krishna. Absolute. This is, in Bhagavatam it is stated, this is non-dual substance. And it is not that we have Bhagavan and something different is Paramatman, there is some. It is just one thing, Krishna. But it appears different in different way when different people with different adhikar, they try to study this non-dual substance. It appears in different way, but it's the same thing.
From Shri Upanishad, we know that only Bhagavan is complete.
Only Bhagavan?
Yeah. When the Upanishads are looking at nature of Brahmana, they are looking at the nature of God.
Yes.
Krishna.
Yes, yes. Because the Upanishads are also devotees of Krishna. So they just present, because this is the general auditory, everybody listens to Upanishads. They present the spiritual knowledge in a very generic way so that everybody can relate to. If they speak on the language of devotees, then the jnanis and the yogis, they won't be attracted so much. So that's why they present the knowledge of Krishna, about Krishna, in a way that everybody can listen. Bhaktivinoda Thakur even mentions that the Upanishads call affectionately Krishna Atma. Affectionately. Because it's just like if you have husband and wife, and they are somewhere on some formal occasion where there are different people there, they won't address each other in the way they address when they are alone. So considering this, we can understand better the Upanishads, how they speak the same truth that is given in Bhagavatam, in Gita, but considering the different people there. Because everything is personal. Every Upanishad is personal. They are devotees of Krishna. In this one. Yes?
Those 5 points that Upanishad, like the five topics, are also like defining points of every mimamsa.
Yes, every philosophy has to deal with this. If you want to analyze any philosophy, you should actually analyze it according to these things, Sambandha, Vidaya, Prayojana. And then you can very easily see what they say, what they have to say. It doesn't matter if it's Vedic or non-Vedic. If you know these five, you know what is their opinion about the most important things. Actually, in the West also, they know about this way of analyzing reality. They know that there is the God, the soul, and the material energy. The three things. What is the relationship?
Golden name?
Sorry?
Those five verses on men for the defining the five?
Five topics of Upanishads. I don't know how the
meaning.
Maybe there is, I don't know. I have to check. It should have some. Maybe I have some.
Yeah,
because
they also have topics.
Sorry?
Puranas.
Puranas?
Yes.
Puranas 5 and Mahapuranas 10.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare